Hello and welcome to this week's Shoot the Moon podcast, broadcasting live and direct from Revenue Rocket World Headquarters in Bloomington, Minnesota, to the Revenue Rocket podcast. Revenue Rocket is the world's premier growth strategy and M&A advisor to IT services companies. We are here today with my partners, Matt Lockhart and Ryan Barnett. Welcome, guys.
Well, hey there, Mike, and hey, Ryan. I don't know about you guys, but we're up here in the great white north of Minnesota, and the temperature's starting to cool down a little bit, and the trees are kind of going to start to turn here. It's football season. Our home team, we'll just keep the promise alive that the Vikings are going to do what they've never done before and win a Super Bowl. And so bright skies, and let's go.
Indeed. It is great to get near fall, and happy that everyone here is tuning in. We were talking, Matt said, you said something to me this morning, and it resonated well, and we made it the topic of today. Which is really, we wanted an overview of what we call buy-side M&A would be. And if you think about the market, there's buy-side M&A, which is where companies, where you're looking to acquire another company. And there's oftentimes in the industry what we would call sell-side work, in which a company takes themselves to market and is on the sell side. So today we wanted to talk about buy-side a bit, why it matters, and to walk through some things that you need to consider when embarking upon or even looking at a buy-side program. But Matt, just remind me, what did you say when we talked about buy-side? What's something you learned since you've been here?
And I knew this before because for those that I'm sure don't know, but I've been working with Revenue Rocket. I was a customer of Revenue Rockets for the past 15 years before joining, and I saw the expertise that you all had way back when. And we did some buy-side work, trying to buy a smaller firm in New York. So the net of it is buy-side is hard. It's it's not for the faint of heart, right? But so buy side work is hard. But you know, Mike, I know that you've been doing it longer than I. Top performers, right? Growth firms do inorganic growth, right? Inorganic growth means you're going to go and make acquisitions. And so why don't you kind of touch on that, Mike, that, why inorganic and organic growth really needs to happen on a continual basis.
Yeah, for sure, Matt. You know, you leave about 50% of your growth potential on the table if you're not doing inorganic growth. And so you may be executing exceptionally well organically with your growth. But there is the theoretical growth limit, right, to grow a profitable tech services company. You know, we've talked a lot about the rule of 45, and you can do some research on that. You are somewhat penned in by that. It's not unlimited top-line growth. Profitable growth isn't available to you. It's not how it works. So in order to maximize your growth potential, you have to have an ongoing inorganic strategy as well. And, you know, certainly marrying those two things together will optimize your potential in the marketplace and certainly help you, you know, get to your goals much faster than organic alone.
Yeah, you nailed it, Mike. There's a growth in which you achieve. And oftentimes companies get to plateaus, and that plateau may be 10 million or 15 million. It's very hard for a $25 million company to become a $50 million company if you don't consider growing with someone. But when companies start to embark upon the process of buying another company, there's a lot of things to consider and a lot of things that go into the process. What's a typical buy-side process look like? You know, what are some major steps and milestones a company looks through when they start to go through and perhaps even consider an acquisition?
Well, that's a great question. I think what's important to note is that, buying companies is really hard, right? It's very difficult to effectively transact a deal. And you've probably heard us talk about the fact that if you want to roll your own and attempt to go do an acquisition, only about 1% of those transactions actually occur. And if you've tried, and I know there's been listeners of this podcast that have tried to do that, and many of them have come back to us and said, wow, we took a run at a variety of companies. We just couldn't get the deals done for a variety of reasons. And then they hired us to help them go get transactions done, and they were able then to successfully help them. It's because a lot of that work is not only very challenging, but it's also time and resource heavy, right? You need to be able to dedicate the time and the resources, knowledgeable resources, to that project. And they include, a variety of steps. One is to kind of determine, are you ready as a company, kind of both strategically and financially? Do you have a clear idea of what it is you actually want to acquire, and will that be accretive to your strategy? Beyond that, can you identify the companies that would be a fit that aren't for sale? Because, if you're going to come to your inorganic strategy and, just respond to those teasers that come across your desk, that may not be the most effective approach to acquiring a company that's an exact fit for your inorganic strategy around, M&A and one that aligns to your overall business strategy. And then can you manage outreach? And then can you, evaluate those companies in a meaningful way? Can you do, evaluation to determine what they're worth? Can you negotiate a letter of intent and include all the information that should be binding and non-binding? And then much more importantly, and where a lot of deals come apart, is, can you work through a meaningful diligence process to know that those cash flows that are presented in their financials are actually real, and that their contracts are fortified, and that you've mitigated the risk to ultimately get to the right of negotiating a definitive agreement with competent legal counsel? I mean, all those things need to be done in a world-class way. Otherwise, your deal's not going to get done.
The state of the market, to talk about that, it's really tough for buyers to buy because sellers are selective of who they're going to sell to. And the best companies that you mentioned earlier, the best companies are really not for sale. So it's a matter of finding those companies that fit your strategic mandate, whether that's to increase revenue, whether it's to expand your service capabilities. Those are hard to find. It's hard to define, and it is hard to define that as well. I think part of why buy side can be difficult is that you're trying to find a Goldilocks in meeting all of your criteria, and that's paired with sellers that just are oftentimes not willing to sell, or they even haven't thought about it. And approaching someone without a pretty guided approach can be difficult for a seller to get into the fold of even considering, should they take your phone call and should they talk about a deal, and what does it mean to sellers? We spend a lot of time educating sellers on what it means to be in a business combination and walking them through what it would take in getting the deal done. And it takes so much more than just a blank check to get a deal done. Matt, I know you've been working on some buy-side deals lately. Has there been something that has helped, that has been key to success in working through the deal from origination through close? Any secrets that you can share?
Yeah. I mean, every deal is its own little life, but, there's some common pieces. As we constantly talk about, right, and I think it's warranted, cultural fit strategic fit, financial fit. And as deals progress, sometimes both buyers and sellers kind of lose sight of the real upside value to both parties culturally and strategically. And people get really focused on the financial fit, right? Especially as deals progress towards the end. So I think that one of the things that we do really well, because we, you know our job, right? We're helping bring people to the middle and bring people along. But it's to be constantly reinforcing, the upside value to both parties culturally and strategically, right? And then, you know, as you move past letter of intent, right? You know, that people have sort of agreed that they're going to get married, that you try to make it as common sense and practical as possible. Here are the steps. Here's the timeline. Here's the, you know, here's the project plan, if you will, that everyone's going to work through on both parties, to, you know, to get to the finish line. And so, you know, it's this combination of sort of diligence and practicality and management, while at the same time continuing to, you know, really further the trust, you know, which furthers that cultural alignment, and then continuing to, you know, fire people up and, you know, be a cheerleader and you know, continue those discussions strategically. So it's just, I think it's just continually talking about those three fits, Ryan, and you know, good things happen.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's very easy to lose sight of the deal, especially if you're the one doing the day-to-day battle. It helps to have an advisor in the mix to move through this. Mike, can you help me understand, if you're doing buy side work and you're trying to buy another company, what kind of advisors do you need to bring to the table to help get a deal done?
Well, I think it's important to note that most M&A advisors are sell side advisors. There's very few that are wired to be buy side. And that's because buying companies is actually harder than selling companies. So, little known fact, you know, M&A advisors will go to the path of least resistance generally. And they are generally started or cultivated as, you know, sell side advisors. And maybe that's all they do, or maybe they're, you know, really built as a sell side advisor, and now they're going to try to wade into buy side. So I think it's important to vet buy side advisors first, as ones that do buy side for real. And oftentimes that's the indication there has to do with how they structure their fees. And so we can talk more about that, but you know, most M&A advisors structure their fees around the enterprise value ultimately achieved for the seller. That's in direct competition to what would be practical or even logical for a buy-side advisor. And so, you know, that buy-side advisor should index their fees some other way so they're not in conflict. And that's certainly a good way to test whether a buy-side advisor has thought through thoroughly how they build their fee structure and how they support a buy side initiative. But beyond the advisor, which I think is important in vetting them as someone who really does buy side for real, you need to also have a very competent legal advisor, one that can help you, navigate the perils of negotiating a legal agreement. If your advisor or your M&A advisor is doing their job, they should be able to help you negotiate the business terms of the agreement. But the legal advisors should be able to be smart about how they help you navigate the legal aspects of the agreement and how to evaluate and mitigate those risks, and not, you know, turn it into a science project. So you need an M&A lawyer who's represented buyers in the past and has experience ultimately in, you know, tech services, right? That's how I would certainly begin to evaluate a competent legal advisor. And your M&A advisor usually can refer you to a competent legal advisor who has experience in the domain if you don't know one. So that's a good source for that. You also need to have some competent accounting advisor who can help you determine the ramifications of structure on your tax, how taxes would be applied. This is critically important depending on sort of what countries you operate in, as well as sort of how you plan to do and structure the transaction, whether it be as a stock transaction or as an asset transaction, and understanding the nuances of those pursuant to your own corporate entity and also based on the seller's corporate entity. So those are things that, you know, a competent tax advisor can weigh in on, and certainly you'll need that level of advice as well.
And when it comes to a, I would say an M&A advisor specifically, I think it is important to understand the capabilities of the advisor when it comes to the offerings that you have. So if you think about trying to get a deal done, A, you have to have the strategic fit and build your ideal prospect profile. And we've got other podcasts on that, and we'll have upcoming future ones on that as well. But understanding who you're going to buy is critically important to really starting to build a list. And from there, you have to have the ability to understand the market you're going after and know who are potential candidates that are out that could be good additions to the firm. So researching and understanding companies that are in the market for outreach is critical. And then you have to have a function that does the pure origination of bringing conversations to the table and ensuring that those happen. From there, you need a very competent deal team that's going to help negotiate an LOI. But even before that, you need a whole financial team that's going to analyze the company that you're going after to make sure that you have enough information for an LOI. Once you get someone locked up into that LOI process, it takes a whole nother team to get through the, you know, 60 to 90 days of due diligence and perhaps even a quality of earnings report or quality of earnings light report as well. So when you think about trying to tackle that as your own entity, it's hard to find a specialty on that, especially if there's a one-man shop who's trying to get a deal done. It's hard for them to have the resources that are available to go build the list and to execute on outreach to that list. And if they can do that really well, it's really hard for them to be financial experts and following the due diligence trail and keeping the deal done. And even then, it's hard to keep the financial team aligned with the deal team to make sure that everyone in the deal feels good and that the key points are being negotiated. So it can become complex when you start to piece it all together.
I would just add a comment on that. Matt, you can chime in here in a second. Many buyers look at M&A advisors on the buy side simply as people that can source a deal, right? And if you're someone that can just source a deal or find a deal, that's problematic, right? And I would say that to Ryan's point, you need to be able to have a very material level of experience throughout the full life cycle. Oftentimes, a financial buyer may think that all I need is someone who can source deals, and that's really not it's not really the case. I think someone with deep domain expertise you know, such as ourselves in IT services, provides a vehicle to be able to provide a lot of value along the full life cycle to not only finding that opportunity, but being able to negotiate it and understand comps because of the level of a number of valuations that the firm does, and then really meaningfully do due diligence so that you can get through that with confidence and know that the company you're buying is what they say they are, and ultimately get, you know, things as nuanced as working capital negotiated are critical. Matt, you had a comment?
Oh, no, I was just going to, you know, commend Ryan for, I mean, so, you know, let's frame it. If you're a Microsoft of the world, then build your own corporate development organization, of course, right? I mean, common sense, right? Because you've got the means, you've got the wherewithal, you're going to do 5-10 deals a year, right? I mean, that doesn't mean that you're not going to work with an outside party, right? You really should, right? Because that independent, you know, entity is going to, you know, provide a lot of value in plugging in and helping, blah, 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 right? But if you are not a Microsoft of the world, then, you know, it's just like, you know, you're better off in working with an expert that does this every day. You know, here, you guys know, I mean, I came from that software development world, and you know, we would go into, you know, global med device companies, and we'd chat with the CIO. And the CIO would be like, hey, you know, my guys think that they're like a software development company, or they want to be a software development company. But, you know, really, we're not. We're a med device company. And so we need your expertise as a software development company. And so, you know, in the same way, it's like this stuff is hard. Right. And you need to just get that expertise, and it's not easy to have all those components. So I think we're all saying the same thing. So, you know, Ryan, you've been doing it for a while. And I mean, how long does it take? I mean, how long does it take to get a deal done? Is it, you know, isn't it pretty easy? You know, you throw a line in the water and, you know, shoot, you know. 2 months yeah. later, you got a deal done, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. All you have to do is write a big check, right? I would love for it to say that. In reality, we certainly can't create a baby in 1 month with 9 people. It's difficult to get deals done. So. A very, very practical matter is that outreach takes quite a bit of time. So understanding the prospect and getting ready, just getting ready to go call and to get after that, you're going to expect at least a month to make sure that you're aligned on the people that you're going after. The list is done. You're financially checked off. You have those things done. When you start getting out there, it can take months. We have seen deals done quickly. It can take years. That based on how specific you want to be. So there are some companies that are looking for the Goldilocks of the world, and it's appropriate to do so. Every penny you invest in this, you want to have a good return. And sometimes if the smaller the target market or the niche that you're going after, the harder that can be. But realistically, it takes a lot of touches. I mean, we've got you've heard this story before, but one of the clients that we've had a lot of work with and success, we had to call 48 times before we had the appropriate call with the decision maker. That took almost 6 months. So it's common for someone to take a while to come into the process. Unless sellers are out there and they're ready and they're raising their hands and saying, "Hey, I'm ready to be sold." Well, I'll tell you, that comes with a almost more risks and sometimes more tire kicking and more inability to get a deal done, because when you're packaged for sale, there's a kind of a different mentality of the company. And when you're trying to truly find that company that's not for sale, that fits your strategic fit, your cultural fit, and financially works, I'll put it this way, don't expect something in the first 60 days. It's maybe a few introduction meetings, unless a company has a bunch for sale. And even then, I'd be cautious on is the deal trying to get done compared to are they trying to find something that works for you? So, I think Mike has often used some phrases on things often will take three times as long as you think and three times more expensive. I don't think it's not quite that much, but it will take longer than you think.
Well, the thing I think is very challenging is predicting the future, right? You know, anyone who's in the business of predicting the future definitively, there's only one thing they really know, is that they're likely to be wrong. And so I think it's hard to predict time. It's hard to predict, you know, you may get lots of interest right away. It might take, you know, like 6 months or a year. I think the key, and I found this to be the case with many of our very successful engagements with buy-side clients, is the most successful clients where we've done many, many transactions are very patient. They're very patient in the outreach phase. They're very patient when it comes to negotiations. And as a result, they're very, very successful. And so I would just, if I were to leave you with anything, I'd say it takes specialists with various skills, and it takes time. And if you're willing to commit the time and the resources, and be open to the advice from the various advisors, you'll be really successful at buy side.
Well, yeah. And I think just to, you know, accentuate that and to wrap to be that market leader is an inorganic strategy is an ongoing strategy that is always open, and it's part of the strategic practice of the firm. And so it's not something that you turn on and off. It's not a one-time type of a deal. It's an ongoing practice and strategic value of the firm. And as such, you know, you're constantly, you know, looking for those right opportunities to extend your market, to capture market share, to fill capability gaps, and you just keep going at it, and you just keep grinding. So it's all good. Love it.
Yeah, that's a great way to wrap it, Matt. To summarize, buy side programs are the fastest way to growth, and to acquiring companies is critical to achieving growth objectives that are much beyond your organic control. It helps to have the right team and processes in place, aided with an advisor that can help fuel deals. And then from there, expect the process to have some origination, some due diligence, and negotiation along the way. And an advisor can really help. With that, I'll turn it back over to you, Mike, and wrap it up.
Sounds great, Ryan. Well, as we say every podcast, it's time to tie a ribbon on it. So we will do that now. Thank you for tuning in to this week's podcast from Revenue Rocket. And we look forward to you tuning in next week when we'll be addressing more interesting topics as it relates to growing your IT services company and or doing an M&A transaction. Thanks, and make it a great week.